Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call,
another kind of daytime radio program.
A Gal Media property. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Wake up!
And thanks for joining us. Wake Up Call, SB Nation Radio. Bob Pockrass is going to join us later this hour from Fox Sports because NASCAR is going to get back into the swing of things coming up this weekend. They're going to be racing at Darlington in South Carolina, but the interesting thing is that they're going to be racing at Darlington again on Wednesday of next week. Then they'll be at Charlotte for two races, and then they're going to go on with their schedule. But there's a report that they're not testing anyone for COVID, the virus. I wonder why. I would think any plan to come back in whatever capacity you are, and regardless of the sport, would have to include some sort of testing or some sort of safety mechanism in place. I'm surprised by this. We'll get Bob Pockrass's thoughts on that as NASCAR returns to racing. They actually suspended March 8th was the last race on their calendar. They were going to go to Atlanta. If you remember, they actually had planned on racing in Atlanta the next weekend. Everything was shutting down. Everything was getting canceled. NBA was pulling out. You know, we were still kind of in limbo with college basketball. The domino hadn't really quite fell there. But NASCAR had said, you know what, maybe no fans in the stands, but we'll race. But then drivers were vocal and teams were vocal and said, maybe we should pull out of this. And they did. And they haven't been racing since. They've done a number of iRacing events. But they've been trying to get back on the racetrack for a while. They've come up with these plans, but why isn't the plan including testing? Like I've been saying all along, look, any of these leagues, we want them to come back safely. That's the thing. And I think a lot of us want sports, but we all want sports done as safe as possible. I haven't heard anybody say, screw the athletes, screw sports. I want it back. I don't care what it looks like. Right? I mean, Von Miller, who contracted coronavirus, I mean, he's an athlete. I mean, he's in shape. And he talked about how unbelievably devastating it was, right? He said he has an asthma nebulizer and that helped, but he was worried about sleeping because he didn't know how far his oxygen was going to drop while he was sleeping. And that was for days and days. We want sports back safely. Why wouldn't there be any testing? All right, coming up, can we rewrite history in sports? One former pitcher actually wants to and wants to badly. I have that story for you next. It's Wake Up Call.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
1998 on a Throwback Thursday, this date, Seinfeld's final episode. 76 million people watched it. 30-second commercial cost $2 million. 22 years ago, and Will Smith was as popular as ever. Will Smith has been famous my whole life, practically.
Feels like it, yeah.
Right? I mean,
ever since parents just don't understand.
Parents just don't understand. Exactly.
That's when he came onto the scene for us.
Yep. Okay. Here's the situation. My parents went away on a week's vacation.
Do you think?
That's great.
Sorry to interrupt the rap because it was going great. But
going great. Yes.
Do you think
I rapped
you can?
Fine.
Do you think you can go from beginning to end with that song?
No. I tried. It was I played it for my kids. About a couple of years ago, I went on YouTube and found it. And I was going to do this thing where I was going to like kind of embarrass my children by rapping to this song of my youth when you want your kids' eyes to roll because dad's being silly. So I did, and I couldn't do it. There were lines in it I forgot, and there were situations I forgot. I was like, oh, but if you give me if you just let me listen to it like three or four times, I'll have it down. Because yeah. I didn't know it. I did know it back in 88.
But if it's playing,
I can sing most of it.
You can sing, yeah. I do it all the time. My family hates me when we take these long when we used to have baseball tournaments.
That's right.
You know, if we threw it on like on a 90s station, I would be singing the entire time. I would not stop singing.
That's amazing. That's
every great song. My wife would look at me. She's like, how do you know every song? It's like, it's all we had.
Yeah.
All we had was the radio. We didn't have anything else.
Will Smith is a lot of people come and go, right? They kind of, they go, they have their moment and then they disappear. And Will Smith is just one of those celebrities that just doesn't disappear. He doesn't go away.
In fact, he's gotten stronger and bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, we can all remember, you know, this rap artist getting a TV show. We were like, oh, okay. You know, I mean, I remember not giving Fresh Prince of Bel-Air that much credit when it first aired. And then, but I became a religious watcher because he was funny.
He was. And to have a hit TV show, hit records, movies, some movies were awesome. Some movies, you know, weren't that great, but projects he wanted to do. Like, you know, the one he did with his son about Earth that was not very popular, but so what? He has hits and misses like any other actor, but he still is a box office draw.
He is. I mean, he's still
been doing it for 30 something years.
I think the money has gone up, but remember it used to be like, it was just a $20 million paycheck.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what, like, if you were a box office draw, you just instantly, you got $20 million.
Exactly.
I think it's gone up, but he's that guy. That you pay him 20, 25, 30 million to do a picture, and you know, because you'll get that money back.
Exactly. All right. So this question I asked coming into this segment, which is, can we rewrite history? Can we go back in time and correct mistakes?
Of course, we
Armando Galarraga wants that perfect game from 2010 on that overblown call by Jim Joyce. He wants that perfect game. There hasn't been very many in the history of Major League Baseball, and he wants to own one. If you remember the time, Galarraga had almost a perfect game until Jim Joyce blew a call. And then next thing you know, he didn't have a perfect game anymore. And people, even at that time in 2010, wanted Major League Baseball to make it a perfect game. Even though it was in the books as not a perfect game, they wanted Major League Baseball back then to say, nope, that was a bad call. And let's fix it. And he is now one of the very few pitchers in the history of the sport to own one. They did not do it back then, and now he'd like to see it done now. Listen, it's a blown call. This isn't a controversial call where you can make the argument that the call was right and some people say the call was wrong. It's not one of those. I mean, almost everybody agrees, if not everybody agrees, it's a blown call.
And he got the next person out.
Jim Joyce thinks it's a blown call. And he got the next person out.
And he got the next person out. So, I mean, he got the no-hitter.
Right.
All we're looking at is saying, hey, this was... And wasn't it going to be the final out?
Yeah.
It was. Like, it was... Yeah. It literally was out number 27 that was the blown call.
Exactly. And again, listen, here's the other thing. It was the 27th out. Would have been the 27th out. But... Again, here's another thing, too. This was not one of those blown calls where it came in like the fifth inning or the seventh inning and he got out of it and he then went the rest of the way and was perfect the rest of the way. So there's just one blemish in one inning. It wasn't one of those things where we'll never know what it was going to be the last. It was heading to a perfect game. Right. Joyce admitted he blew this call almost immediately. I think it was right after the game. He realized he had made a mistake. So Galarraga wants this in the record books. Look, the celebration on the mound, all that stuff. He doesn't care. He wants it in the record book that he's gotten a perfect game, because I don't know how many people have had one, but it's not a lot of people that have ever had a perfect game. A lot of people have had no hitters. But perfect game is a whole different beast. To go in the record books as having this is a very, very big deal. For some reason, I'm nervous of the slippery slope, but I'm totally okay with this. I'm normally not somebody that likes the idea of retroactively changing results of games. I think part of the lore of games is that it comes with the blemishes. It comes with the controversy. It comes with the mistakes, right? It is what it is. It's part of the history of the game, right? Every single competitive sport has a moment that should not have been there. Right. But for the mistake of somebody, it should not be there. This is one I could be fine with and say, you know what? It's OK to say that let's fix this and make it a perfect game. It didn't affect the game. It didn't affect the standings. It didn't affect anything. I mean, I guess you would. I guess it was ruled an infield hit. If I remember correctly. So you just take that away, I guess. But I can. This will be fine with me. But I do get nervous because I don't like things to go down that slippery slope where if it works for Galarraga, it's going to work for anybody who loses a championship or something like that. And how far back do you go? And what's the criteria for this? And what's the statute of limitations on this? I mean, do we go back to the 50s? Can we go? Is it within 10 years? Or do you just go, you know what? It's none of those things. It's none of those things. There is no slippery slope because we're not going to talk about it again unless the circumstances warrant us to discuss it again. And it'll probably take a decade for us to figure that out anyway. Because you can do that too. Major League Baseball can come down the line and say, look, we're changing this, but I don't want to hear from any of you about some game or some playoff game from the 80s or the 90s or anything like that, or that we have to start reviewing. This is not going to be a sit around and discuss this and do this forever. We're going to do it one time. We're doing it one time because he deserved this perfect game. An umpire blew this call and that's it. But if you think I'm going to go back and give the 1962 World Series to the whoever, you're wrong. We're not doing that. And the other leagues, like the NFL, the NBA, should be like, and don't even think about coming to us. We're not doing this. But I think this is one of those recognizable moments. However, here's the flip side of that. Is part of the lore of this that it was a blown call? Is part of the legend of this that it was this? Here's the call. We're going to give you the call of the out.
Here comes number 27. It's Jason Donald, and a crowd of better than 17,000 to its feet.
The guy we've been waiting for all night.
Ground ball, right side. Cabrera will cut it off. Galarraga covers. He's out. No, he's safe. He is safe. He is safe at first base. Jim Leland. Oh my goodness. Jim Joyce said he was safe at first base. You make the call. Cabrera, Galarraga.
Did he miss the base? He's out. Why is he safe?
He must have missed the base.
Are you kidding me? Why is he safe?
You see right here.
Why is he safe? Oh my goodness, Jim Joyce. No.
Oh, jeez Louise.
Oh my goodness.
What a travesty. What an absolute travesty for Armando Galarraga.
Yeah, listening to that, I kind of think baseball should just kind of give him the perfect game.
I was watching it. I don't know. Do you remember the play before that?
No, I don't remember the play before that.
The play before that, the outfielder ran about a mile to track down a pop fly.
Oh, that's even worse.
And then the 27th batter comes up. The crowd is on his feet. I mean, you heard the crowd of 17,000.
Right.
And if, in case you were wondering, yes, those were all piped in boos, by the way.
Was that a day game?
It was. Maybe twilight.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I mean, it looks a little. It looks like this. I mean, the field looks lit up like a night game.
Gotcha. Okay.
And yeah, I mean, you just watch it. I was watching the replay. It's a really bad blown call that had replay system. It's one of those games that, or one of those plays that this is the reason why replay was put into effect
right.
in baseball. Because this was one that had the umpires had the privilege of replay, they would have immediately gone to it, and they would have spent all of 2 seconds looking at this video.
I know this is dangerous, what I'm about to say, but shouldn't have Jim Joyce just known the situation and just been like, even if this is close, I'm going out.
Wasn't that, remember when it happened? This, that was the question.
Yeah.
The question was, you know, was he thinking out? And then I remember one of like the conspiracies was like he just automatically went safe.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it just had it in his mind. He was just going to go safe no matter what. I can't remember.
That's what I'm wondering. Like, you don't want umpires or officials to know the circumstance. You don't want that, right? You want them to call what they see without any context, right? Of what they're calling. You don't want, but we're all human.
Yeah. And you remember like Jim Joyce crying after the game?
Yes.
I think if he wants to make right, Jim Joyce, he needs to be on the forefront of this going, dude, give him the perfect game. I made a mistake. And I agree with you. You know, part of the lore is, you know, is that it was a blown call. It'll go down in history as one of the plays we will always remember and talk about. But I think we still will have that, even if you give the perfect game and just put it down in the record books as a perfect game.
If you give it to them, you still have the story.
Yeah.
You could still have the story. It's fascinating.
And Jim Joyce can finally sleep at night.
It's fascinating because, and you know what, I'll touch it on the other side, because there is something about a controversial way you didn't get something making you more famous than if you actually got the thing that you were chasing. We'll talk about that more coming up next. Don't forget, Bob Pockrass is going to join us, talk NASCAR. They're returning to the track this weekend at Darlington, but apparently there's some testing that is lacking in the return to the sport. We'll discuss that with him. Coming up, it is Wake Up Call on SB Nation Radio.
Finally, I figured out what it took a long, long time.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hi, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call, SB Nation Radio. Glad you could be with us as we roll along on a Throwback Thursday going back to 1998. Yeah, because this is what we do. It's the final episode of Seinfeld on this date in 1998. So we were talking about Armando Galarraga, who wants his perfect game that he was robbed with when Jim Joyce blew the call on the 27th out, which would have been the 27th out. We got to clarify that, because again, if it happened in the fifth inning, you could make the case
that
maybe we shouldn't go back and do that. But if it's the final out of a perfect game, so he's making news today, 10 years later, saying, "Hey man, can we go back in time and just erase that and give me my perfect game?"
And also we got to realize too, he got the next person out.
That's right. He got the next person
out. No runs were scored. No one else got a hit. No one else got walked or anything like that. You know, no wild pitches, no errors, nothing. He literally got the next person out.
And he didn't even get a no hitter out of the deal. Like, that was ruled a base hit, an infield hit.
Yeah, that's right.
So it wasn't like he got it was an error. Like, you could make the case that Cabrera bobbled the ball in the throw to Galarraga.
And it is one of those things. You don't want to set a precedent. You don't want to have this be the Pandora's box. It's like, well, if you're going to change this one, why not this? Why not that? I think this one is a rare circumstance, because this would have been the 27th out.
Yeah, exactly. So again, I understand that what baseball want, you know, I get it. If you're a commissioner, this is the last thing you want, is all of a sudden you're inundated with a whole bunch of people going, okay, now I've got a case against this guy. I got a case here. I got a case here. I got a case here. And now you're overwhelmed with this. But I think that if you're baseball, and look, you can't speak to the other sports, and the other sports should be like, we're not dealing with this. You know, let baseball do whatever baseball wants to do. But no, you can't come knocking on our door to see if we can change the result of the 86 NBA finals or whatever. Like, we're not doing that. But if you're baseball, I think you can make a nice statement here. It's clean. It's polished. It fits.
It has no outcome on the season either.
Right. It doesn't have any outcome on the season.
The Tigers won the game anyways. The score stayed the same. So nothing there changes. It's just whether or not you call. I mean, I guess you're taking a hit away, but it's not like this guy, I don't even remember who the batter was.
Yeah.
It's not like he has just 3,000 hits. And if you take a hit away from him, now he has 2,999.
Right. And look, when Barry Bonds was hitting home runs and everybody was like, you got to take all those home runs away. Well, you can't take home runs away, right? They're part of the game. Like, they're part of an at-bat. They're part of the statistical continuity of the season, right? You can't just go, those home runs never happened. No, yeah, they did happen.
Because then if you do that, you're taking away wins.
You're taking away wins and runs and RBIs and what other people did and, pitchers' ERAs that were affected by that and all sorts of statistics. This doesn't do any of that. It puts him on a short list of people who accomplish something that's very difficult to do in the sport.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, maybe he's... maybe you slide instead of him being, I guess, maybe he's 23rd on the list.
Right.
And whoever was 23rd gets moved to 24th. Like that person, like it matters to that person.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure how many perfect games there have been.
So, but part of the lore of this is the mistake. But I think you and I were touching on this in the last segment, which is you could still own that. You could still give him the perfect game, and he would still, part of his lore would be it came 10 years later because Jim Joyce made one of the biggest blunders in umpiring history. And I mean, look, when I watched that video that you sent me, the video, he's out by a step and a half. I can't believe it's amazing how blown that call was. Even watching it 10 years later, it's incredible how blown that call was.
Now, maybe, I don't know if this means anything, but it would have been the third one that season.
Perfect game?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Dallas Braden had one.
And
Roy Halladay had one. That is right.
And Roy Halladay, I mean, literally.
Braden had his on Mother's Day.
Dallas Braden, that was May 9th. Roy Halladay had his on May 29th. Armando Galarraga would have been June 2nd. So less than a week later after Roy Halladay's would have been Armando Galarraga.
Maybe Jim Joyce got a phone call that said, hey, we don't want to make these too easy, so whatever happens, make sure he doesn't get the perfect game.
Yeah.
I mean, these rare, and all of a sudden we've got two already in the books. Let's not make it three.
And all it does is just, it would move Philip Humber, Matt Cain, Felix Hernandez down one spot.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure you ask all three of those guys, and you'd be like, whatever.
Did Matt Cain have a perfect game and a no-hitter? In his career. I thought Matt Cain did it twice. Well, not two perfect games, but perfect game and then also a no-hitter.
I don't know. I just see a no-hitter or a perfect game.
Yeah, well, there hasn't been very many people who have done it, so he would have been an elite company. And then also, there's all sorts of cool things you can do with that as a pitcher in terms of your marketing. Perfect game. You could be signing you could be autograph shows, signing you could all sorts of do something. But also, listen, again, there have been people who have pursued something that would put them in immortality, but the pursuit of it was derailed, and they lost, either controversially or whatever, and they're almost more famous for that than they probably ever would be had they won something, right? Whether it's a golf tournament or tennis or whatever it is. But again, I think there is a look. Okay, when Jim Joyce makes the call, Galarraga has this look of like disbelief, but he's smiling. I would be screaming. I would be livid.
Well, I guess maybe
he wouldn't be able to hold me back.
Maybe at that moment, he thought maybe the runner got him. Because, I mean, it's in real time, it's pretty quick.
Maybe he doesn't realize, how out.
When you slow it down, and that was what Jim Joyce immediately afterwards when he had press conference, because obviously, you don't normally talk to umpires after a game, but this is the one time where you had cameras all in his face, and he's breaking down crying because he knows he just robbed a guy of one of the more special things in baseball. I mean, only 20 people have done it.
Right.
And, I mean, in the history of baseball, which
That's
is,
it.
You know, 100 plus years. And maybe it was when he got back to the locker room and he finally saw the play. If I'm at that point, I'm turning over every table.
Oh, I know.
And if I'm one of his teammates, I'm handing him stuff to smash and throw. And, it's like, here, take this. Go smash this. Go take this and, take my bat and just start whacking the ground.
Again, I hate to be that guy that says you should know the circumstance, but if you're going to error on the side of he got the perfect game, and you know what? Now I'm looking at it, and the runner beat the throw. Oh, my bad. Whoops. Rather than the other way around, which is I blew the perfect game, and the runner was out by a step and a half. I would much rather see a guy celebrate a perfect game when you blew the call the other way than the way it went down.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
The final episode of Seinfeld airing on this date, so we're going back in time 22 years. NASCAR hitting the track this weekend. They'll be at Darlington. They are returning to work after a period of time off to the coronavirus, the iRacing events, and all of the things that they did during the break. But now back to work. Bob Crockrest joins us from Fox Sports to talk about the return of NASCAR. How are you, Bob?
Doing great. How you guys doing?
By the way, it's our Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. All right, Bob, in terms of the return, it is going to be, four races in like 11 or 12 days? They're going to do two at Darlington, two at Charlotte. Why did they decide to do that many races to cram the schedule like that in the next couple of weeks?
Well, the financial foundation of the sport requires them to race. TV doesn't pay the tracks money and doesn't pay the money that goes into the purse for races unless they race. Sponsors don't pay unless they race. And so by doing four races in 11 days, that's pretty much a month's worth of cash flow that the teams are going to be able to get in 11 days. And that, you can't discount that when they've been having furloughs and pay cuts. And, you know, these aren't teams that sell for hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, Furniture Row, so a single car team sold for $6 million a couple of years ago. So they really need this. They need the cash flow. And I think, you know, with not a lot of their sports going on, obviously their TV windows open as well.
And since because they're a sport that's not based like a players union, like we're seeing in other sports, I'm sure there are haves and have nots in this sport. How close were the have nots to not being able to run at all if this lockdown had continued?
Probably at least two or three teams were extremely worried that if the shutdown continued into June, that they potentially would have to shut down. So yeah, it's definitely a concern, and you know the tracks would still be there, but you know that they all would have been in financial hurt.
So Bob, how is the safety of the drivers and the teams? What is the plan for that? I hear there's no testing for the virus. What is that true? And what are the safety mechanisms for anybody that's involved in the return?
That is true. The teams have been asked to do some everybody's filling out forms. They're going to get temperature checked at the racetrack. If you have a fever, you will then go to see medical personnel who will do some additional screening, some oxygen type testing to see maybe potentially what all your symptoms are and make a decision on whether you can get into the track. NASCAR said they don't have access to rapid tests. The 24-hour test really does them no good, and they didn't feel like that they should be taking tests away from people who need them. So that is what they're going to do. Now, you talk about safety of the drivers. The drivers are going to have a specific time when they're supposed to be there. They'll be screened. They're going to drive their car to their motorhome. They'll get dressed in their motorhome. About 15 minutes before the race, they'll walk from their motorhome to their car. They won't mingle with their crew or virtually anyone except for the person who helps them get into the car and put up the window net. So, you know, that's among the things that NASCAR is doing. Like, if you are with one team, you can't go over to the area where another team is, another crew is. If you're part of the road crew, you're going to not be where the over-the-wall pit crew guys are for very much during the day either. So they're trying to separate it so that if somebody does test positive in the future, that they can do enough tracing where they don't have to shut everything down.
So the teams are also limited in terms of personnel. How many team members will be per team? And are they severely handicapped with those restrictions?
So they've cut about four spots per team from about, I would say, if you take out the hauler driver and stuff like that, from about 17 to 13. Are they going to be handicapped with that? Probably not, because there is no practice. There is no qualifying. So some of these mechanics who normally would work on a car during practice, they're not going to be needed as much. Now, granted, if you hit the wall and you have a quick repair that you have to try to make during the race, that could it could potentially hurt you there. But beyond that, you're not going to need as many people because there is no practice and there is no qualifying. Many teams have decided, so they already have engineers who work in their race shops during a race, looking at data. So many of them will, especially if the crew chief is an engineer, will leave there an extra engineer that they typically bring at home.
Is there any concern about drivers not having practice, not having qualifying, not just getting in a car and away we go after this much time off?
There is concern, especially from drivers, especially at Darlington, one of the toughest tracks on the circuit. You know, this isn't, it's not going to be easy. I've seen some drivers who said that they would be maybe a little timid. I never heard of a driver being timid before. I would say maybe as cautious as you can be going 150 miles an hour. But there's worry. The biggest thing is that they use practice to make sure that they have like the heights of the car best, so that it operates the best in the air, and that they don't like drag the front of the car. So what NASCAR's going to do is that they're going to have a caution at lap 30, and teams aren't going to lose spots on pit road during that caution. So they can, and they can come down twice during that caution so that they can work on their cars a little bit and get them a little bit better for the rest of the race.
You bring up Darlington, and that's a really good point about how tricky that track is, because it's not symmetrical. The turns are not the same. You have a narrower turn on one end and a wider turn on the other. It's not a pure oval, right? It's, I don't know what they describe it as, but it's like it's almost like an egg.
Right, yeah. It's an egg-shaped oval, if that makes sense.
That makes sense, right?
So, you know. it's one where you... where you hit the wall and occasionally, and it is not easy. And you know, another thing is that these Cup teams are used to having practice and races with lots of tire rubber on the track, and now there is no preliminary race the day before or practice the day before. So they're going to be racing on virtually a green racetrack. That's going to change a lot during the event itself.
How is the schedule? So they're going to have to, they had to take some races out for the rest of the way. Obviously the ones that are done are not going to get made up, but how did they adjust this schedule for what the new normal is going to have to be in terms of getting to races and getting teams to races?
Right. So the eight or nine races have been postponed. Three of the races have been realigned to these two races at Darlington and additional race at Charlotte. The track that lost races, Sonoma, won't have a race this year. Chicagoland won't have a race this year. And Richmond lost one of its two races this year. So now going forward, NASCAR hopes to have race at all the tracks that they plan to race on at the start of the year. But, you know, it's still certainly to be determined because, you know, you don't know which tracks you're going to be able to go to, you know, depending on the decisions of local and state officials. So we should get a little bit more clarity of NASCAR's schedule beyond the end of May to today. But everything still, some of those things will still remain fluid depending on what happens as the country begins opening up.
And the playoffs have not been affected, so the schedule for the playoffs, is that still intact?
Yes, the playoff schedule is pretty much intact. The only change potentially could be Texas and Vegas swapping, because the Vegas race was tentatively scheduled, the current Vegas race scheduled a week prior to the new date for the Electric Daisy Carnival at Vegas. And so if that festival happens, they probably swap Texas and Vegas in the playoffs because of the preparation time Vegas needs to put on that festival.
Bob Pockrass joins us from Fox Sports as we talk NASCAR's return to Darlington coming up this weekend. I got to admit, I was a little naive, I guess, with the whole iRacing thing. I didn't know that the technology was so awesome and so amazing that they could be doing things like what they were doing during the break with racing online. Overall, how was that received by drivers? It seemed like everybody was having a good time doing it. I know there was some controversy with a couple of drivers, obviously one serious, but overall, How was that experience? Was it good for the sport to have an outlet like that where they could still be on TV?
Well, it's great for the sport to have an outlet like that, to have some sort of competition with the stars of the sport. It was great to be able to see drivers while they were playing the video game, because you could see their eyes and see their focus. And usually you don't get to see that.
Yeah.
You don't get to see that because they have their helmets on, right? So it gave a little bit of a visual to fans that got to see a driver reaction that they didn't normally get to see. But, you know, look, it's a sophisticated video game. It takes, you know, the people who were used to doing it were able to do it well. Those who didn't, you know, there's certain things that, you know, the actual feel of, you know, of kind of your butt in the race car, you don't really get in that game. Obviously, you know, we see cars slipping and going airborne, and you know, there's no fear of injury, right? So,
right.
You know, there's certain things that they can't replicate, but it was enough to kind of satisfy some drivers competitively, but I think more importantly, mentally. You know, it gave them something to do, and it allowed them to do something that required an intense focus. Maybe not as intense as they are in the race car, but more intense than anything else they could get.
One final question, Bobby. It involves replacement drivers. Explain how it works. If I'm in competition with points or trying to get into the playoff, and I'm sick, or my wife has a baby, or I'm injured, and a replacement driver comes in, how does my team remain successful? Has there been any change to that if a driver should get coronavirus and is forced out of the sport for a period of time?
There'll be no change in the rules. NASCAR has a rule that requires drivers to attempt to qualify for every race and race every race in order to be eligible for the playoffs, unless they get a waiver. And NASCAR typically gives waivers fairly. They've been fairly lenient on it. And Kyle Busch missed 11 races and won the championship in 2015 right. with a waiver. They just gave a waiver to Matt Kenseth, who didn't race the first four races of the year and is now the replacement for Kyle Larson. So the one thing is the driver doesn't get points. So, you know, so they're hurt by not racing because, hey, if there aren't 16 winners during the year, the rest of the positions are determined by points. So they don't get a chance for those points. They don't get a chance, obviously, to win, but they still retain their eligibility for the playoffs.
Excellent. Bob, great stuff. Really appreciate it. And I know it must be exciting to get back to real racing. I appreciate your time helping us figure out where the next step is for the sport.
All right. Thank you, guys.
You got it. Bob Prochrest again joining us, Fox Sports, on a Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. That's at Darlington coming up this weekend. And if you are a racing enthusiast, they are racing Wednesday of next week at Darlington as well. And then two races coming up again in Charlotte, including the Coca-Cola 600, the longest race on their schedule. That is Memorial Day weekend. That is the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend. And they'll be up and running so far with that race. It's kind of a staple for the holiday weekend. All right, the Indianapolis 500 not going on, but the Coca-Cola 600 is going on as scheduled at Charlotte Motor Speedway. It is Wake Up Call on SB Nation Radio.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Lines. Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. 1998, going back in time. All right, so you were telling me the Masked Singer. Go ahead.
Yeah, the only reason why I'm bringing it up, I mean, I wouldn't bring it up if it wasn't something unique and kind of like, okay, this was different. But yesterday they had an elimination. Now they're down. They were down to the final four. So this guy literally made the semifinals.
Okay.
Right.
So but real quick, this is like celebrities who sing, and you have to guess
celebrities,
who the celebrity is.
Yeah, they're in a big. I mean, the costumes are incredible looking.
So if you fool the judges, you get to keep going?
You get to keep. Well, no, if you don't get, if you get voted through by the fans.
Oh,
now
I
this
you.
Is
okay.
one of those shows the fans are still in the crowd. This was all pre-taped way before all the mess went down.
Everything's already in the can.
Yeah, everything's already in the can. But I wanted to play this. I wanted to play this for you because you're not going to be able to guess who it is because you don't know any of the clues.
Okay.
But when I tell you who it is, you're going to be impressed. Oh, there's a light that glows by the front porch. Don't forget the keys under the mat. When childhood stars shine, always stay humble and kind. Now, I'm going to turn it down a little bit, but I mean, good singer, right?
Yeah, very good singer.
Now, I will tell you, this is an athlete.
An athlete. What sport?
Baseball.
Bryce Harper.
No.
Mike Trout.
No.
Close?
No, not really. He's a retired baseball player.
Oh, retired baseball. Cal Ripken.
That'd have been awesome. Right. No, in fact, this is Barry Zito.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, he actually is a musician in his own right as well.
I did not know that.
He's a musician. He came from a musical family. One of his clues, which this is what I loved about it, is like how musical his family was a Santa stocking with a piece of coal in it.
Uh-huh.
Because his dad wrote and recorded music with Nat King Cole.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Did they know he was an athlete? Was that one of the clues?
No. Well, Ken Young, I don't know, you know the comedian?
Yeah.
He figured it out.
He figured out it was Barry Zito?
A couple episodes ago. And he kept throwing it to Barry Zito just based off of one clue because he had a guest appearance on JAG.
Wow. Amazing.